Oh, hi, everybody. My name is Matt Storrs, and welcome to Matt Splaining. On today's episode, I have somebody on who's going to talk about their area of expertise, and I'm very excited to talk with them. Expert, please introduce yourself and tell us what you're an expert in.
My name is Jennifer Glick. I'm a storyteller in New York City, and what I consider myself to be an expert in is the subject of Gidget. Gidget covers a lot of ground, but as an American cultural phenomenon, I feel I'm very qualified to speak about Gidget.
Absolutely. My understanding of Gidget, it's the mid-1950s to late 1950s, and America at the time was completely obsessed with surf culture. It was this kind of like idealized concept of what society could be and like what the young people are into, and about these, the money and the free time of like, okay, we have like teens don't necessarily have to have jobs all the time and everything like that. And so there's a lot of this disposable income. And what a lot of companies realized at this time is like, oh, we need to figure out how to market to these people. And one of the things in the 50s, especially after following the Second World War, was the prevalence of a lot of gadgets and a lot of home goods that started getting introduced, like a lot of stuff in magazines. You save your box tops, what have you. You get your x-ray glasses for little kids and everything like that. But then as time went on, there were even more legitimate businesses and items that you could get. And they realized that, at least initially, they were focusing far too much on young boys and young teen boys. And so they're like, we need to get some gadgets for girls. But they're like, oh, we can't call them gadgets. Gadgets has already been kind of gendered and like kind of predisposes it to these boys, like boy items, like, oh, this cool scope or this cool truck or this whatever toy, G.I. Joe type of toy or whatever it would be, little helicopters, what have you. So that's when they came up with the idea of the Gidget. And it was gadgets for girls, and it was just shortened to Gidget. And some, unfortunately, it was a little bit too focused on kitchens and stuff like that. They didn't really have an understanding of like what sorts of gadgets that anybody could be interested in. Like, these things I'm interested in, I would be interested in picking these things up if it had been targeted. So I don't know if they really, the advertising people of the time, really knew what they were doing. But for instance, pull-out stoves, very famous Gidget. The green bean slicer, famous one, saved a lot of time, but also like very confusing. If you just look at it, you don't realize what a green bean slicer is. It's like, is this a pencil sharpener? This doesn't seem efficient. The pencil sharpener, also a Gidget, but like one of those ones that's kind of like, oh, this has utilitarian aspects to it. And then the cake breaker, where you would have a bunch of spikes on it, and it kind of looks like a torture device, and you could use that to kind of put slits into cakes. And again, another one of those items from this time period where it's like, is this a gadget? Is this a Gidget? Is this something that could be misconstrued if you didn't have a background in understanding what happens in the kitchen, what happens with baking? And then a lot of this was focused on getting a younger audience and to get their disposable income, because a lot of people were very concerned about all of these kids spending so much time at the beach, spending so much time at the soda shops. And they were like, what if we can get some of their money and get them back into the house to study and to do these things, we can have steady universe going forward, and people that are kind of good, upstanding citizens that people can like respect and understand and trust as time goes on. And I think that that kind of permeates through society. I think that there's a lot of gadgets as time goes on that people try to use for advertising. Like, they kind of actually started respecting people of different backgrounds and everything like that. And so now we have a lot of, it's not his and her gadgets. It's just Gidgets and gadgets. You know what I mean? It's anybody could be interested in anything. And I think that that's a lot of progress we've made as a society, but that initial stages was a little bit hamstrung by that kind of gendered mentality of what people might be interested in. Now, based on what you've heard so far, about how much of that would you say was accurate?
Some of it.
Okay.
Not all of it, but some of it. I agree with you wholeheartedly that there are many Gidgets. You can say there are one and there are many Gidgets.
Okay.
What Gidget was? Gidget was a fictional character in a novel published in 1957 for young adults before there was a niche market of young adult writing. It was a fictional character. Her name was Francie Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
They called her Gidget because she liked to hang out at the beach in Malibu because she really wanted to learn how to surf. So she hung out with a bunch of these guys who were surfing. They called her, oh, you're a Gidget. You're a half girl, half midget. That's how the fictional character got her nickname. And
I see.
She was fictional up to a point. The novel was written by a guy named Frederick Koner, who had been a screenwriter in Los Angeles for many years. Gidget was his first novel. It was based on the life of his teenage daughter, Kathy Koner. Kathy kept a diary. Kathy started hanging out at the beach. Her family liked to take her there. And one day she saw a bunch of guys surfing, and she decided that was exactly what she wanted to do. And she started to befriend them. And she borrowed their surfboards from one of whom she brought her first surfboard for $35. She would bring them food because the main guy, his name was Tube Steak Terry, he had the shack on the beach. And in the novel, there's a character called the Big Kahuna who lives on a shack on the beach. So that's who he was based on. Gidget is a novel about a teenage girl coming of age and discovering that she loves surfing. Love surfing so much, and she's got to fight a bunch of boys, and she's got to live within the constraints of her time. She's got to be a 15-year-old in 1957 and follow all the rules there, but at the same time, she finds this thing that she absolutely adores doing. She loves surfing. She loves hanging out with the guys. She is a teenage girl. She's growing up. She has a definite crush on one of them, but that's mm-hmm. not the whole reason for her to exist. The whole reason for her to exist is that she wants to surf. That's right. All she wants. I mean, they're cute, they're fun, they're nice. I can fall in love with one of them, but honestly, what she really truly fell in love with was surfing. And that was true of Kathy Koner. Kathy Koner lived in Brentwood, went to Malibu, surfed. She kept a diary. She told her father, I really want to write a book about this. And he said, well, I'm the writer. You let me do it. And it took him 3 weeks to write it, finish it, submit it to his agents. His agent sold it to G.P. Putnam and Sons. G.P. Putnam and Sons told him, Mr. Koner, you have a hit here. Ultimately, this book went on to sell about 1.5 million copies. At one point, it was outselling On the Road, the Jack.
Oh, wow.
So that was right. So you have two very separate pictures of what young people in America were doing at that moment. They were either, you know, hitchhiking, writing beat poetry, getting into all kinds of trouble, or for the first time, a teenage girl was going out there and doing what she wanted. Yeah, she was concerned about boys. She was sexually attracted to boys. Boys were part of her story, but boys weren't her entire story.
Right.
What she cared most was surfing. And Surf Magazine in 1999 named Kathy Koner, the person upon whom Gidget was based, named her as the eighth most influential surfer of the century. Of course, number one, you had Duke Kahanamoku, a Hawaiian who brought surfing to America, who got it popularized. And then there's six other men, and then there's Kathy Koner. So yeah, Gidget was the fictional idealization of Kathy Koner. Gidget was then, the novel was became a film in 1959 with Sandra Dee and James Darren. There were three theatrically released films. There was Gidget Goes Hawaiian in 1961, Gidget Goes to Rome in 1963, and then there were three made for television movies.
Mm-hmm.
68, Gidget Grows Up, 72, Gidget Gets Married, 1985, Gidget's Summer Reunion. And there was, of course, the eponymous television series from 1965 to 1966 starring Sally Field. And the most unusual thing about Gidget is that one person got to play her twice. In the 1985 Gidget Summer Reunion, plus there was a 1986 to 88, the new Gidget, that Gidget was played by a woman named Karen Richmond. All the other Gidgets were different.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like a James Bond situation in some
Yeah.
ways.
Quite. Very much that all the other Gidgets were for different the first three movies, the Gidget's love interest, Moondoggy, is played by the same person. It's played by James Dearan, but there are three different Gidgets. There's Sandra Dee, there's Cindy Carroll, there's Deborah Wally. And Gidget, the novel, begat Gidget, the film, begat the surfing craze. There wasn't even surf music in 1957. And the movie came out, became incredibly popular, and then every studio begat American International Pictures, all those Frankie Avalon, Annette Funicello beach movies, and subsequent beach movies after that. And what it really did was popularize surfing. Surfing at that in 1957 was something that people and certain beaches in certain parts of Southern California and the Southern Pacific did. And then all of a sudden, everybody in America knew what it was. Everybody in America knew what the music developed, and then the films developed, and then the mythology. And this leads us on to Endless Summer and Endless Summer 2 and Point Break. And it made surfing something more than just a few select people at Malibu Beach were doing.
It kind of broadened the horizons of surfing to a very general audience.
Yes. And even if you had no idea how to do it, you knew how to look, you knew how to sound, you knew how it sounded, you knew what it looked like when you watched it. And from there were it became a professional sport, which
Right.
and it became and there was the clothing, the sunglasses, the surfboards. It
Right. Without this, we wouldn't have PacSun or any Hollister or any Aeropostale, any of those things. Like, those don't exist without first starting kind of these trends to gain steam.
Yeah. Without Frederick Koner or Kathy Koner, we really wouldn't know what any of this was.
That's wild.
It is. It's stunning. It's a, my favorite thing about what we know as Gidget is that Frederick Koner had been born in Czechoslovakia, and he lived between the wars, and he would have stuck around except, oh, by the way, he was Jewish. And he had been screenwriting for German film production companies, and in 1936 they started taking his name out of the credits of every film that he worked on. So he picked up and left, ended up in California, had a very successful screenwriting career, and a guy who ran from the Nazis, who emigrated and brought his family to America. And created the most quintessential American thing, the
Right.
surfer girl, like made people so that to me is so he basically reinvented himself and gave American popular culture something that a whole force in Europe didn't want him to have any part of. How do I explain this properly? I'm sorry, I don't want to mean to talk myself into a circle that.
No problem. It sounds to me, I mean, then forgive me if this is not exactly your point. But it seems to me that he kind of popularized and like gave more agency to women and like to young women, especially in his, especially back in Germany and everything like that. Like he gave a voice to another subjugated set of people.
Yes, and Gidget has far more agency in the books. I would urge everybody read the book. It was re-released in 2001, and Kathy Koner really pushed that to happen because she wanted people to remember her father's writing, which is all very good. He's written a whole lot of stuff that he participated in popular culture. He created something that might not have been organic to what he was, but because he became American and it's to me, I'm thrilled to pieces Gidget Jewish. I really am. It just that like, oh, that a whole she's something that people aspire to be, that this is what you came from outside, but now you've contributed and you have created to the greater popular culture. And that to me is what is the best immigrant story anybody could tell.
Right. It's become the kind of one of the icons of American popular culture that has been subsequently emulated is based on literally a group and class of people that had literally been oppressed a decade before. And now it's, hey, this is what all of these American teens are emulating and looking up to.
Yeah, that's what you want to keep happening. That really is what you want to keep happening. You don't want that to pass into history. And I think that's really, that's a whole other reason why the book was re-released. It also, more than the films, and I think a little bit more than the television series, the novel really had Gidget making her own decisions.
Right.
And she was influenced by her parents, and she was influenced by her friends. But ultimately, the closing line of the book is, I guess I really did fall in love with surfing.
Right.
And even though she gets entangled with Moondoggy and wonders and wants the guys to see her as more than just a girl, ultimately it comes down to the end of it. She loved surfing. She loved surfing, and she just wanted to do it. And that's why she was there.
Absolutely. Jennifer, this has been absolutely insightful. Clearly, I did not know as much as I thought. If people wanted to learn more about you or would like to learn more about Gidget, where would you recommend that they look?
There is a couple of articles in Vanity Fair about surfing. There's Look for the Real Life Gidget Looks Back from 80. Kathy Koner is now 81 years old. She's the same age as my mother.
Oh, wow.
You can find me on Facebook at Jennifer Glick, at Instagram at GlickGen, at Twitter at GlickGen. I will be performing May 3rd in Awkward Teenage Years, the Under St. Mark's Theater. And I'm out there. Please contact me if you want to know more about Gidget or anything else.
Absolutely. Thank you. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
I had a blast. Thanks for asking. I really appreciated
Absolutely.
Being on your podcast.
Absolutely. My name is Matt Storrs, and this has been Matt's Planning.